Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Stuart Acuff with Utility Workers Union of America, asking you to tune in every time you can to Bob Carson's Carson's Corner, one of the best pro-labor shows in America. We love it at Utility Workers. We love it across the AFL-CIO, and we're grateful to Bob for coming on and holding up our issues and holding up our principles and values.
I'm Andrew Craig. I'm an investigative reporter and attorney based in Washington, and I've the author of Presidential Puppetry, Obama, Romney, and Their Masters. And I want to encourage everyone to support, listen to, and talk about the Carson's Corner show in New Jersey, which is a pioneering, courageous, and apt voice for progressives in New Jersey that I first came to know in 2009 when he was the pioneering and virtually unique media outlet willing to take on Chris Christie, dig deep, and look at how he had come to power and how he was misusing it. And 4 years, 5 years later here, that's all come to pass.
Hi, this is David K. Johnston, and you're listening to Carson's Corner with Bob Carson.
This is Lamar Waldron, the author of Ultimate Sacrifice and Legacy of Secrecy, those two books, the latter of which will become a movie produced and starring Leonardo DiCaprio in 2013, and you are listening to Carson's Corner with Bob Carson on Underground Progressive Radio.
This is Greg Palast, reporter for BBC Television and Democracy Now, and author of the new book Vulture's Picnic, In Pursuit of Petroleum Pigs, Power Pirates, and High Finance Carnivores, and you're listening to Carson's Corner on 5:30 a.m. Underground Progressive Radio, radio for the 99%. Help us occupy the airwaves and support Carson's Corner and support 5:30 Underground Progressive Radio.
Hi, this is Frank Schaefer, author of Sex, Mom, and God. You're listening to Carson's Corner, a show I enjoy. I hope you enjoy it, too. I encourage you to listen.
And welcome live to another edition of Carson's Corner here on Blog Talk Radio and in conjunction with the CommonsProjectNetwork.com. My name is Bob Carson. I'm pleased to be with you here this Monday night at 8 p.m. And we have a very, very special show here for you. You know, our old friend Stephen Lerner, who is the founder of Underground Progressive Radio and is very active in Ocean County politics and is an old friend of the show. You'll recall that Carson's Corner used to be on Underground Progressive Radio, along with other syndicated shows like In Between the Lines and Democracy Now. Stephen got in touch with me and asks me if I would be interested in interviewing someone who's running for office. And we haven't had someone running for office on this program in a long time, maybe since Pat Noble, a local candidate. I forget which office he was running. I think for Freeholder of Monmouth County or something like that a few years ago. But really, in the show's history, we haven't had too many people that were running for office on this program. And so I said, yeah, sure, absolutely. We'll definitely have someone on. And the individual that we have on today, his name is Howard Kleinhandler. He is running for New Jersey's 3rd Congressional District, I believe. He's been an Ocean County resident for 27 years, and I'm on his website now, and he has some very, very interesting platform ideas, stuff that I certainly agree with and advocate. And so we're going to bring him on the show right now to have him tell you his platform and why he's running and sort of describe the race, if he would. Howard, welcome to Carson's Corner.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for calling. We really appreciate it.
Sure. So why am I running? Like you said, I've been an Ocean County resident for 27 years. I'm an attorney. I've been practicing law in Manhattan for over 20 years. And I really got into politics in 2010 when I ran in New Jersey's 4th Congressional District. And there's just a lot wrong with government. And we, I think the Democratic Party, needs someone who can voice and defend and actually promote the important issues of the day. And if you'd like, I can go into some of those issues that I'm passionate about. And I think, you know, the people of the 3rd Congressional District are also pretty passionate about.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm on your website now, and there's a lot of things that really jump out at me that I think are very important issues. Unfortunately, because of the power base in Washington, D.C., the special interests, you know, it doesn't seem that these issues are ever solved. What do you think are some of the most important issues to your constituents?
Well, one of the first issues is the Affordable Care Act, colloquially known as Obamacare. It has a lot of positive attributes. It's been helping a lot of people, but it didn't roll out that efficiently, and there were some disappointments with it. And my view is the Democrats can't run from it, as some have. But on the contrary, let's talk about what's good about it. 40 million people now have access to affordable health care. Kids stay on their parents' policies till age 26. You can't be denied coverage anymore if you have a pre-existing condition. Medicare has been opened up now to a vast, a far larger array of participants. So low income and other people suffering hardship now have access to medical care. And while, sure, people couldn't purchase it on the website, and people got shocked sort of when they saw their premiums go up instead of go down, we have to improve on that. And so we have to take the positive in Obamacare and take it to the next step and improve on it. And I've got, you know, detailed ideas. For example, we have to allow insurers to sell across state lines, which will open up the marketplace and bring prices down. We have to enact this thing called the Medicare You Can Buy Into Act. It's legislation pending, which allows you to buy Medicare insurance at the same rate that it costs the government, so we're not going to increase the deficit. And it's also referred to as the public option. So now you have real competition, because the private insurance companies have to meet competition with the Medicare program, and prices will come down. There are also ways to cut red tape, and I'm also a big advocate of this thing called accountable care organizations, where doctors, healthcare providers, medical facilities, like people who give you the x-rays and the MRIs, all get together and streamline the process and reduce costs. So you can go to one-stop shop, and you know, somebody could listen to your heart, and if you need a CAT scan or an MRI, you can get it done right there. And so there are ways to bring down the price of health insurance and but at the same time make it more affordable and more accessible to people, because that's the name of the game. We want people to have access to health insurance, and I think that's a big priority to a lot of people, not just in this district but around the country. And the Republicans really don't have an alternative. They're quick to say what's wrong with it. They're quick to point out its failures. But what's their alternative? There is no alternative. Going back to the pre-Obamacare days is what? So we want 40 million people not to have insurance. We want more people to clog our emergency rooms, because that's where they're getting their initial or primary care. That doesn't work well for us. It doesn't work well for the people who wait to see a doctor until they have to run to an emergency room. So I think there's a lot of positive in Obamacare, a lot more to improve, and I think what we see in the polls nationally is that what is that is and is that is what people want. They want Obamacare to be improved, they don't want it scrapped. So that's certainly one of the big issues that I'm a big advocate of.
Yeah, I mean, you raised so many good points. I mean, I really don't even know where to start. You mentioned the troubled rollout that the Affordable Care Act has or had, and unfortunately, sometimes in politics, it seems that perception is reality. It seems that the conventional wisdom across the Beltway is that, oh, you know, this is a losing issue for the Democrats. The Democrats, you know, although they can't run away, they can't really promote it. And although I didn't support the Affordable Care Act. As you mentioned, there are a number of good provisions in it that we all agree. But overall, I don't support the legislation for more progressive reasons than anything else. But nonetheless, it is refreshing to hear individuals that support provisions and stand proud on the some of the good provisions of the Affordable Care Act and whatnot. And as far as cost savings, well, there was just a report that the CBO released that says that this is going to save $100 billion more than they previously estimated. Medicare, all the things that you mentioned. Medicare, the progressive host Tom Hartman, in his book Rebooting the Dream, has a chapter called Medicare Part E for Everybody. And that would certainly do the American public a service by allowing people to opt into Medicare, because we know that Medicare is an incredibly efficient program run at a very low overhead. And, you know, it's one sector of the economy that the government can actually do pretty well. So I think that's very, very important. But the flip side of that, as you know, is the special interests that do not want the government involved with health care because they're afraid that people would like Medicare and ultimately opt into Medicare and put the private insurance companies out of business.
Well, the answer to that is private insurance is never going to go out of business because people are, especially people who are more well-to-do, have more disposable income, or people who really have put a priority on their health care, are always going to be able to buy the policies. It's like saying, well, we shouldn't sell Chevrolets because Cadillac's going to go out of business. It's not true. People are always going to buy Cadillacs, and there are a lot of people who are going to buy Chevrolets. And that, I think, is what's going to happen with the health care. And you see that to a certain extent outside of America, in Europe, for example. Europe, for the most part, has socialized medicine, meaning you pay a higher tax and you don't pay to go to the doctor. However, those who want private care pay for it. And there's no shortage of people in Europe going to doctors and paying for private care. And in America, we're not going to go. I'm not an advocate of socialized medicine. I like the insurance system the way we have it here. I think there are problems with socialized medicine because you get a supply-demand incongruence, and you have people waiting to get very important procedures done. So I like our system the way we have it. But I think there is no danger to private insurance going out of business, especially if you drop the barriers to competition and you let insurance companies compete all over the country. What's going to happen is, like any industry, it'll consolidate. So instead of having 1,000 insurance companies, maybe we'll have 500, but they'll still be out there. And so I reject that argument out of hand.
Now, another thing on your website, another key issue here that this is something I talk about quite frequently on the show, is the ending of corporate welfare. Unfortunately, in our society, welfare that goes to non-working people, poor people, for example, gets a lot of attention, even though if you look at what we're spending on food stamps, according to estimates that I've seen, it's less than 10% of the federal budget deficit. And yet we seemingly have a corporate welfare system that's built right into the system that really is not up for any type of real discussion here. I mean, I can go over the statistics, the numbers of money that goes towards corporate welfare, for example, in the agriculture industry, the defense industry, the banking industry. 3 cents out of every federal dollar goes to the banking industry for interest rates. It's a built-in subsidy, unfortunately, that I don't think gives a return to the American people. What's your ideas about ending corporate welfare? And give us your platform with regards to that.
Well, first, and this has been a hot topic recently, we can't have a situation where a company like Apple, which has $150 billion in cash, is allowed to park tens of billions of dollars overseas and not pay tax. And you see that with other, you know, Fortune top 50 companies like GE and the rest. If you're predominantly doing business in the United States, you should not be allowed to, you know, create a basically a straw company in some tax haven location and park your money there. It's absurd. I mean, to state the proposition is to reject it. It's absurd. That money has to come back to the United States. It has to be taxed. It has to be put back into our economy. That's number one, and I think that's gaining support even, you know, even in some more moderate and sane Republican circles. So that's the first thing we got. Second, we're subsidizing a lot of very profitable industries. You mentioned the banking industry, which, you know, after we bailed them out, I think it was correct to bail them out. They're making tons of money. They don't need subsidies from the federal government anymore. Big oil does not require, special tax treatment. In fact, if we talk about my energy policy, I'm just against continuing to drill holes in the ground to meet our energy needs. And the last thing I think we want to do is provide incentives to big oil company. And then, you know, we have this tremendous dichotomy of American citizen, where you have someone who's doing very, very well, a guy like, Donald Trump or Warren Buffett, and they're paying tax at a tax rate lower than, you know, people earning $20,000 or $30,000 a year. And there's got to be something we do to fix that. And don't get me wrong. I am all for every person, you know, living the American dream, hitting it off, hard work, making a ton of money. That's the American way. That's freedom. That's capitalism. And I am a big capitalist. Okay, I'm a big corporate lawyer in Manhattan. I represent a lot of rich people. I love rich people. But we cannot have a situation where they're treated better than everybody else. And they don't even want to be treated better than everybody else. It's this fiction that if you want to level the playing field between the ultra-rich and the middle class and the less fortunate, somehow you're against capitalism or you're against accomplishment. That's wrong, okay? That is just flat wrong, and that's another thing that I think we need to talk about, we need to debate, and we need to make sure that people making, $100 million a year aren't paying, 12% income tax. It just doesn't make sense.
Now, tell us specifically about your opponent. Give us kind of, an idea of what the voters in the upcoming election have to choose from.
Well, on the Democratic side, there's Amy Bellegarde. She's a freeholder in Burlington County, and she's running basically a campaign on endorsements. I mean, she's got a lot of the established Democratic organizations behind her, but if you look at her website, I can't for the life of me know what she stands for. I mean, she doesn't say a word about Obamacare. She doesn't talk about corporate wealth. I mean, if you look at her website and you look at the issues pages, I don't know what she stands for. And what I think I bring to the table that she lacks is I can articulate, I believe, very persuasively why the Republican message is wrong and why the Democratic message is right. And if you look at who the Republicans have put up, I mean, you have this guy Lonergan and this guy MacArthur, and they're battling it out on television and any place else that they can find each other on who's the more left, who's the more right-wing fanatic than the other one. I mean, they want to throw out Obamacare. Their vision of America is embodied in the Ryan budget, which calls for privatizing Social Security, cutting Medicare. Lonergan, in particular, was vehemently against any type of funding for the Sandy hurricane victims, which to me is just, it's mind-boggling. I mean, it's the exact opposite of what this country stands for. This country stands for the proposition that when your neighbor is down on his luck or the victim of a tragedy, we lend a helping hand. And according to Lonergan, we turn our backs. That's not America. That's not what we fought in various wars for. And we have a lot of veterans in this district. That's not what our veterans went to war for and suffered, you know, immeasurably to give us our freedoms. So, I mean, that's basically the playing field. There's one other candidate on the Democratic side, a guy named Todd. He I think he's a little on the fringe. I mean, if you look at his website, he wants to impeach President Obama, which I don't understand why a guy running on the Democratic ticket would want to do that. But I haven't heard much about him, but that's basically the field. There are three of us on the Democratic side and two folks on the Republican side.
And real quickly, what does the demographics of your district look like?
All right, it's two counties. It's Ocean County and Burlington County. Again, a large part of Burlington, a pretty large part of Ocean. It's mostly white, middle-class folks. There are some pockets of minorities in Burlington. It's a swing district. In other words, the political pundits rate this as a toss-up election. It can go either way. In 2008, a Democrat held it. In 2010, a Republican took it. The Republican held it in 2012, but now there's a vacancy. So you have pretty much a centrist population of really good, you know, commonsensical people who want to do the right thing for America, who want to do the right thing for their neighbors, and will listen to people who are reasonable. And that's why I think that I'm a candidate that's going to appeal not merely to the Democratic Party, but to the large independent body of voters that we have, because they want someone that who could say something and the reaction is, yeah, you know, that makes sense. That's something I could identify with. This guy sounds like he knows what he's talking about. He's not too crazy on one side. He's not too crazy on the other side. He wants to get something done. And that's, you know, that's basically our district.
Yeah, and I think that there is a sentiment out there that, you know, I and others argue that the Tea Party and the Occupy movement, to the extent that the Occupy movement exists, are basically, you know, they're products of people's frustrations about what's going on in Washington, D.C., and how ultimately, you know, the middle class and the poor and working poor individual, they're not being represented. And I think that there's a lot that unites us. And I surprise myself when I talk to Tea Party people and just I realize how, you know, we have a lot in common on many of these issues that we discuss. And so it's just a matter of bridging that divide and uniting us and whatnot. So we'll see what happens. I'm definitely impressed with your platform and the way that you speak about issues and whatnot. And I wish you the best of luck going forward. Your website for the people out there is www.hkcongress.com, correct?
Yes, great, yes. And I urge people to look at the website and, you know, it's really informative and there's opportunities to engage in blogging. So we really want to hear from voters. And even if you don't live in the district, we'd love to hear to what you think about our ideas and how we could make things better.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much for joining us. And hopefully we'll talk to you sometime down the road as the election draws closer and we can get some updates.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Take care, Howard.
Sure.
Okay, that was Howard Kleinhandler here on Carson's Corner. And, I urge everybody out there to visit the website and get familiar with his platform and contribute. You know, be active in the political process. It's very, very important. You know, I forgot to ask him. I was going to ask him. I'm really kind of annoyed at myself here. I was going to ask him how he would reach out to apathetic voters out there, people like myself who really believe that the system is inherently corrupt and the system is designed to preserve the status quo. So no matter who you put in there, you know, for example, if we got somebody in there from the, you know, Socialist Workers Party or, you know, fill in the blank, how much can they really change things? You know, if you have a politician that really, truly advocates change and has that in his heart, well, what's going to happen if he starts to actually try to put in motion some of these platforms that he has, whether reforming the corporate welfare system, the tax system, which I think you can make an argument is one giant giveaway to the financial elites. The United States tax code now is well over something like 70,000 pages. And it's over 70,000 pages because corporations spend a lot of money to write the tax law, and special interests are writing the tax law. And as a result of that, when you have the special interests writing the tax law, then surprisingly, they write the tax law to their self-interests. And that's why we have a lopsided tax code, which allows the hoarding of trillions of dollars. And these IRS individuals, these bureaucrats, if you will, as David K. Johnson refers to them, and they are bureaucrats, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that, because there's bureaucrats in the private industry as well. They're no match for the special interests out there. They're no match for the billions of dollars being spent by the financial sector, the defense industry, fill in the blank, to avoid paying taxes. And as a result of that, taxes, as David K. Johnson says, is the core of our democracy. And as a result of that, we have a tax system that I would argue inherently punishes working individuals, people that make their money through a paycheck or a wage, or a salary or wage, and have their taxes deducted, before their income, before their check comes. I think that's inherently unfair. Howard mentioned some of the other, Donald Trump and some of these other individuals that have benefited tremendously from our tax system. Well, Donald Trump didn't pay taxes for a number of years in his career. For, I think, 4 years, he didn't pay taxes. And that is just an example of the tax system and all of its loopholes and allowable deductions benefiting someone like Donald Trump, who really doesn't need that extra money, really does not need it. And it's unfortunate. But, that's what I was going to – what I should have asked him is that, how do you speak to individuals like me who say, no matter what happens, we're not going to change the game by electing any politician. And I think, if anything, President Obama's election really kind of solidifies that, is that this is a guy, President Obama, who really spoke about change, right? He ran on a very populist platform of, reforming the healthcare industry, reforming our tax code, and creating America jobs and all the things that you would expect to hear from a populist candidate. Then, as we know, when President Obama actually got elected, and during his inauguration speech, his tone shifted from populism to compromise, to working with the Republicans and working within the system. And then from there, it's just deteriorated. And, that's a testament to the special interests, the entrenched interests in Washington, D.C., that really are running the show. And so, I don't know. It's good. It's refreshing to hear anybody running for office speak about some of the issues that we spoke about. But I just have a real cynicism when it comes to our system, because it just doesn't seem to be working at all, and elections are just merely almost at this point a show. Really, I mean, it's true. It's like Marky Smith said, the author of the book Consent to Tyranny, Voting in America, where he said basically if breathing is bad for you, then continuing to breathe is only going to damage you. Well, if voting is bad for you, if you vote for politicians that are essentially representing the business interests of America, then you're not doing something that's benefiting you. You're almost consenting to tyranny. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. I really do. All right, we're going to take a brief time out. We'll be back here on Carson's Corner speaking about the issues of the day. So keep it right here. Make sure to support the commonsprojectnetwork.com for great, independent, outside-the-box, progressive material. So here it is. We're going to take a brief time out. We'll be back after this song.
Frank Schaefer, author of Sex, Mom, and God. You're listening to Carson's Corner, a show I enjoy. I hope you enjoy it, too. I encourage you to listen.
All right, back live here on Carson's Corner as part of the CommonsProjectNetwork.com. My name is Bob Carson, and I want to encourage you, if you want to please friend me on Facebook at facebook.com/BobCarsonMMA, and please make sure to like the Carson's Corner Facebook page at facebook.com/CarsonsCorner13. We just wrapped up our interview with Howard Kleinhandler. He is the Democratic nominee, I believe, for the 3rd District of New Jersey, representing Ocean and Burlington County. And you can visit his website at hkcongress.com, hkcongress.com. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens there. To see you know, if he actually does make some headwaves. It's pretty hard when you're going against an establishment candidate. And that's why if you look at the 2016 election, you know, there's a lot of people that want Elizabeth Warren to run, okay? And, you know, Elizabeth Warren, you got to take her for what she's worth. I generally support Elizabeth Warren, but I just, you know, Terry Lee, the activist, the online activist who was really the creator of the Boycott the Vote campaign in 2012, basically said that people like Bernie Sanders and people like Elizabeth Warren are basically put there by the establishment and by the elites to, you know, create the illusion that they're somehow a more progressive wing of the party. And these individuals, you know, by and large, don't have any support. Are they trying to really change the system? Are they trying to work within the system? And that's really a fundamental choice or a fundamental position. You can either try to work within the system for change, or you could try to abolish the system or wait for the system to abolish itself. And that's why it's kind of, you know, for me, being extremely cynical and just really almost moving beyond the election system in America, which I know I could speak for a majority of hosts on the Commons Project Network, and in that sense, we've all arrived at the same place. We all, by and large, are you know, disenfranchised individuals that reject the current system, the current economic system, the current political system in front of us, and realize that, you know, unless it's like Brad Hulhut said, either reform or revolution. Well, you know, I don't think reform is going to work at all. But it's difficult for anybody to run against an establishment candidate because the establishment has so much power over both political parties. And the Democratic establishment now, as we've said time and time again, is no more friendly to the working folk than the Republican establishment. The Democratic establishment now, I guess you could say the Clinton wing of the party, you know, the Democratic institutions like with the DCCC, other Democratic institutions, they mirror what the Republicans look like, you know, decades ago, maybe before Ronald Reagan. And they've assimilated now. They've become more and more right-wing over the past several decades, and they uphold certain fundamental assumptions about our economy. For example, everything must be centered around business. We can't question the motives of capitalist owners. Capital is more important than labor. I mean, we could just go on and on and on about the, you know, assumptions that the establishment upholds. And so therefore, it really comes down to almost like what Karl Marx said, is that, you know, election time, you have a choice between which political party oppresses you the least. And I think there's a great deal of truth to that. I really do. And, you know, we're seeing this all across America, and I've been talking about this for a long time. I'm certainly not the only person that's been talking about this a long time, is that regardless of the establishment of either party, regardless of the functions of government being nullified by special interest, regardless of all this, there are individuals like myself and others who are completely desperate, completely angry, and there is a populist uprising in the making. You know, we saw this recently with the fast food protests, okay? All across America, people, workers, fast food workers are have been congregating to protest the ridiculous wages that they get paid and the corporate model, the corporate welfare model, which allows a company like McDonald's or Walmart to pay its workers so low that they qualify for government assistance. At the same time, these multi-billion-dollar corporations are receiving subsidies, indirect and direct subsidies from the United States government. It all goes back to what we were talking with earlier with Howard. They're rebelling. They're questioning the morality of the corporate model. You've got a real effort to increase the minimum wage in America. Now you've got the Senate that's poised to vote to increase the minimum wage. Aren't you excited about that? Don't you have a great deal of faith that our Congress is going to be able to pass an increase in the minimum wage? I mean, the Senate is, but they're going to fall short of the 60 votes, of course. And then, it's got to go through the House. It's like nothing ever is going to happen because the business interests have too much of a stranglehold over our politicians. And the one argument that business community makes, because it's the only, politically acceptable argument, they can't tell you what they really want, which is more profit. Businesses are profit-driven, end all be all. The corporations are monsters trying to gobble up as much profit as they can. And in order for them to gobble up as much profit as they can, they have to pay their workers the least amount that they can, okay, legally by law, okay? And so that's what corporations want, is they don't want to pay their workers well. They'd rather have their workers poor and desperate and rely on government subsidies and any type of government assistance, which is constantly under attack in our austerity-driven world. And that's the business model in America. And so nothing can get done. It doesn't make a difference. This is just a symbolic vote on the part of the Democrats. And even though raising the minimum wage, if you look at the polls, is supported overwhelmingly by the American public. I've seen some polls that suggest that 70% of the American public supports raising the minimum wage. And why isn't it done? Well, because the needs and interests of the business community is the only thing that is reflected in the legislative process. It's the only thing that matters, because we live in an oligarchy. We live in one thing I disagree with Howard Kleinhandler about is, he said that the rich, don't want this influence and they don't want this. Well, I don't agree with that at all. I think that, the rich people are not monolithic. You'll have some individuals that, are uncomfortable with the nature of politics, that are uncomfortable with, some of the issues that we discussed here. But the reason why corporations spend billions of dollars, the reason why, rich people lobby the Congress, and if you look at studies, our politicians spend a hell of a lot more time dialing for dollars than they do making legislation. The reason why they do that is because they want a return on their investment. And the reason why, if you look at people in the top 1% of income earners, you look at their voting patterns, they're not going to vote for a Democrat or a progressive. They're going to vote someone that is going to, serve their needs and interests, okay? And that's a conscious effort on their part that essentially says, I don't care about the rest of the community. It's about me. It's about my family, and that's it. And so, I was one author of – I forget the author's name. It's Alan something, the author of book that Brad Holhut recommended. And he said that elections are every 2 to 4 years, but for wealthy people, it's every 2 to 4 weeks or 2 to 4 months that they have the ear of their representative. And so what emerges out of this is a system in which we have right now, where you have something like 70% of Americans that support the raising of the minimum wage, which should be a huge economic stimulant. You have a majority of American workers that would love to join a union. You have a majority of Americans that would favor raising taxes on the very wealthy in corporations. You have a majority of Americans that, if they could opt into Medicare, okay, because Medicare is an extremely efficient program and the government actually does run healthcare well, and the idea of the private insurance market, you know, I'm not even sure they should be allowed to exist, you know, for moral reasons, for economic reasons and whatnot. But these initiatives can never come to fruition because of the special interests out there, because America is a business. America has been run like a business for the past 30-plus years, and businesses are not democracies, and results in businesses are largely skewed, and we live in a society where we have a winner-take-all society, where greed is good, greed is reinforced by our economic model, and it's only getting worse. And I take solace in knowing that a majority of Americans, I would say, are living paycheck to paycheck and are one health care issue away from total bankruptcy. I take solace in the fact that we are a nation of many employees, and that unites us all. And then one day, something's got to change. It may not be in my lifetime, but you know, we'll just have to see what happens. So you know, it's really, really unfortunate. But this is the climate that we find ourselves in. And one of the things that, you know, I really, really want to highlight, and I think it's very important, when we spoke about this with Howard, is the differences between the Tea Party and the Occupy protesters. Even if there isn't an Occupy movement out there, the sentiment still exists. And I love occupiers because, let me tell you something, and I would throw myself into this category. You know what I did today? I don't have a car, and I spoke about this on the last program, okay? My car broke down. I have to rely on New Jersey Transit. And you know, they say that rich people take so many risks, and we all have to bow down to the businessman. But you know what? I took a huge risk just trying to get to a damn bus stop today. I had to walk along Route 9 in Skid Row, practically, where I found syringes on the ground, beer bottles, and I had cars whizzing by me at 67 miles an hour, and I went to the Barnes & Noble, and the bus driver got pissed at me because he couldn't stop, and I had to run across Route 9, and it was a real, real disaster, okay? I know I could speak for a true occupier out there when I say that this economic system in America, capitalism, has completely beaten me down. It has completely forced me through forces of nature to, you know, work in a slave environment, because, you know, working in America, if you're a wage earner, you're essentially a slave. Okay, you're at the mercy of your employer and the economic forces. It has really beaten me down to the point where it's like you don't even care anymore. You know, just surviving, just not dying, just you know, not entering into a shelter, living in your car is some sort of struggle. I mean, this is going to be the new American dream now. Forget about, you know, middle class upbringing, sending your children to college on the GI Bill. Forget about working in a union shop like Tom Hartman's father, Tool and I shop, and you know, raising your family and having your wife stay home. That's gone. That's dead. Ronald Reagan destroyed the American dream. And so now the new American dream is not to be homeless, for crying out loud, or to get out of debt. And you know, occupiers like Brad Hull-Hutt and others that we saw over the last few years, these young individuals that really have nothing, have huge student loan debt, hundreds of thousands of student loan debt, have no prospects of getting a job, because in America, you know, opportunity is generational. They don't care if they live or die, these people. You know, there really is such despair out there that it's that's why, you know, the Occupy protests originated, is because, you know, people have nothing out there. And it's not getting any better. It's only going to get worse. So really, like, you know, you look at someone like myself. I'll throw myself in that category. Someone that has hundreds of thousands of dollars in student loan debt. You know, someone that unfortunately, because of the loose labor market as perpetuated by corporate forces, has almost no opportunity to get a decent paying job, where there's, what, 3, 4, 5 people looking for every job, which subsequently drives down the cost of labor. Really, like, how much do you care? It's like, you really don't. That's how miserable this country has become. That's what a cesspool this country has become, you know. And it's only going to get worse, which in the long term may get better for us. Now, I always talk about the elections and how elections don't matter. And you look at 2016, well, what difference does it make? If Hillary Clinton gets into office, it's more, you know, corporate reform. It's more like her husband, how Bill Clinton, again, you know, you go back to his New Covenant speech where he spoke about, you know, changing the system, and then he gets into office, and then he has a supposed visit from the financial interests, like people like Robert Rubin and others, and then, you know, changes tune, goes in a more corporatist direction, reforms welfare, the war on welfare, the war on crime, free trade, free and fair trade, and you know, all the pillars that the Republican Party believe in and stand by, and so does corporate America, and so it doesn't make any difference. The United States of America is like a line. Okay, and you get served in accordance with your income. We're not a democracy. There's not equal representation, okay? And arguably there won't be anytime soon. So that's what I admire really about the occupiers out there. There are people out there that bypass the corporate media and are bypassing the political system in America, rejecting the economic system. And that's what we need, is a real structural and institutional analysis. And we need to question the, you know, framework of assumptions that the establishment has been abiding by. You know, I'll go over them, you know, but I mentioned them earlier in the show. That's what we really, really need, you know, because it's just not getting any better. And that's why I love the folks over at the CommonsProjectNetwork.com, because those are folks like me who reject the corporate media. You know, you have some millionaire pundit out there, some, you know, millionaire congressman. We know that half of Congress is comprised of millionaires, and we're supposed to believe that these people have our needs and interests at heart. It's impossible. You can get the most well-meaning politician out there, but it's impossible for him or her to have our needs at heart when they're not going through what we're going through. We don't have a Congress of workers. You know, we don't have, you know, worker-led organizations. That's forbidden. That's forbidden by law, because as Joe Burns points out, the author of Reviving the Strike, we have a system of labor control in America. And so, you know, what are we supposed to do? Just, you know, accept these people as our leaders and think that somehow, you know, these individuals are going to stop serving the puppet masters and start listening to us? No, that's absolutely ridiculous. That really is. We need to really, I want to say work outside the system, which I realize is very difficult to do. I realize that tremendously. But we need to start thinking about that and start really examining, you know, how we look at things like ownership in America. Ralph Nader talks about this a lot. And I was almost tempted to pick up his latest book, but it seems a little bit too bipartisan for me. You know, on the back of his new book, I forget what it's called, he has a quote from Grover Norquist, crying out loud. But, you know, in one of his recent books, Ralph Nader talked about, you know, reforming or redefining ownership. You know, for example, I spoke a little while about how, you know, individuals like myself are frustrated with the system, and we've gone to the internet to voice our opposition and to encourage people to reject the current system and whatnot. Well, you know, that's great. It's great that we're able to do that, and the folks over at the Commons Project Network are able to do that. But, you know, that's under attack. That's under attack now because the corporations in America, the very special interests that have somehow been granted ownership of the internet, they want to consolidate the internet. They want to restrict access to the internet so that they can make more money, of course, right? Because as I said last week, these corporations would privatize the organs in your body if they could. You would have to pay a fee to them for your organs to work. And in many cases, they do that. It's called private health care in America. But, you know, this platform that we have, it's under attack. And mark my words, the way it's going in this country, you're not even going to be able to have a show like this. For me to have, you know, a Blog Talk account, or for me to visit certain websites, or for me to post a website, it's going to cost a fortune because these damn disgusting sociopathic corporations and shareholders want to make as much money as they can, and they want to dismantle dissent. And that's what this is all about, and that's what's happening. And, you know, these same people that are doing that, they're trying to create a tiered system for the internet. These same people, they can just pay their corporate news shaper to tell you that it's the government that's doing this. And these stupid Tea Party people out there, you know, the Cliven Bundys of the world, the Donald Sterlings of the world, these inherent racist individuals, they'll go along with it, and that's the starting point of debate because that serves the business interests of America. And so instead of, you know, examining corporate greed, it's the government, and we have to just repeal back regulations. And as long as we just free up the telecommunication companies, they'll be nice to us, and you know, they'll allow us to go on their internet for, you know, all of our income each month. It's disgusting. It really is. It makes me sick to my stomach. But I'm telling you, that's where we're going here. Internet usage, gone. We're going to have a tiered system, you know, data caps, you name it, whatever benefits the corporation. You know, the court, and it's laughable to see these cases that go before our court. I was saying to myself last week, you might as well just have Verizon, you know, Time Warner, Comcast, on the bench at the Supreme Court. Why even bother going through this facade? Why even bother going through this puppet show to pretend that we have some sort of, you know, legal system that's fair and impartial and it's going to, you know, rule against this special powerful interest? No. These individuals are controlled by the special and powerful interests. And so they're going to rule in favor of big business every time because, you know, that's their paymasters. It's really unfortunate. But I'm telling you, that's going. The internet is going. Regulation on corporations are going. It's going to be unconstitutional to regulate a corporation in this disgusting country. What else is going to go? Public unions, forget about it. It's gone on their way out. Consumer protection agencies, all the countervailing institutions, they're going by the wayside because we are moving towards a complete corporate state in America, a complete corporate state, whereas David Harvey says, Professor David Harvey says, you know, basically, you know, the major decisions are going to be made by just a few, you know, groups of banking and special interests and local decisions like where to put a park or you know, where to put a memorial is going to be in the hands of the people. We don't have a democracy anymore. It's really sad. All right, this has been Carson's Corner. My name is Bob Carson. Thank you very much for joining us here today. Big thanks to Stephen Lerner of Ocean Happening, and big thanks to Howard Kleinhandler. Make sure to visit his website at hkcongress.com. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, show some respect.